Okay. You know, I also wanted to add that we talked a few times about the village and how important the village is when we're building families and building communities and stuff. And I also want to say that my question that I have is, how powerful are you when you're giving advice to someone that's coming to you when there's another village out there? Because does the village contradict what you're saying, you know? And what I mean by that is that when you're giving this advice to a young lady that's you know, her boyfriend or husband or whatever was in prison, does she go back to her community, whether it be like even her mom or her sisters, cousins, relatives, friends? And do they get the opposite, you know, advice? Does that make sense? Like, no, you know, you need to work this out, or, you know, he so-and-so is a good guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, do we get that opposing advice? And what do we do with that when we get something like that with people we've known all our lives?
Right. And, you know, I get it. And that's right. You're absolutely right. I mean, what you're saying is absolutely right. But let me just explain the years of history of experience that I have with working with people from the courts that have been charged with murder, charged with assault, charged with family violence. A lot of them, when they come to our class, they are totally unaware of the information that we provide. But what the information that I provide is based on what the law says, meaning if you don't get the law to see it your way, you'll end up incarcerated. So if you're not trying to have a history or a criminal background, or you don't want to be a victim, which I see these cases all the time, then you would listen to this information. A lot of the people that are listening to the other, they haven't experienced it. Mm-hmm. And for example, the young lady was, it was told that the young lady, when she found the numbers in her guy friend's watch, she said, I'm not going to tell my mom because they think he's an angel. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of us want to keep an image of what's good for others.
Yeah.
And I know that side of it too. That's why it's so important for us to tell this side, you know.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt you to know and use this as a in your perspectives. Again, we don't want to look at anything from one perspective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I can look at it from, okay, mama's going to be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at it from, but this could be livelihood. Mm-hmm. Three, or I could get in killed. You know, my child could be parentless. You know, so I need to look at things from all angles. And that's the beauty of making a very good and sound decision. There are so many people incarcerated because of family and friends, so-called mm-hmm. family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
I've had clients to tell me their parents have introduced them to marijuana and crack at 9 years old. I've had children to tell me that they've been tied to a bed by a family member and spanked, whooped, mm-hmm. beaten.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people to tell me that their parents left and went to live with their boyfriend, and they were mm-hmm. there basically to raise themselves. And mm-hmm. so I know that you're gonna, just like everybody's thinking family is everything, but family is not everything to everybody. There are some people that get better treatment from strangers than they do family. So I give the people that are giving advice, they may be giving it from their perspective, and that's fine. But the perspective from which I speak is A, spiritual, B, legal,
mm-hmm.
C, emotional. And it really is huge, because the more you stay in something, the more you become entangled.
Speak on it.
Which, that's one of the reasons I don't recommend anyone, and I speak from experience. I don't just speak from teaching criminal justice for 19 years, sociology for 13 years, family violence for 13 years. It's not just because of that. Personally, if you stay in a miserable relationship, a relationship that you do not enjoy for whatever reason, you're going to find other people attractive. You're going to find, if someone's giving you attention, showing you love, you're going to find them appealing because you're hungry. Hunger is an emotion. When you go in a grocery store and you're on an empty stomach, what happens?
You buy everything, everything.
Because everything looks good, right? Well, the same is true if you're in a relationship and you're hungry emotionally. Anybody reaches out to you, show you a little attention and love, you're over there. You're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What am I even doing with that person? Mm-hmm. I don't even like them. Like, you don't like them like that after. See, you'll like them like that during because they're meeting that emotional need.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not with them while you're with the other person and it's just that person alone, you're like, uh-uh.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't even look at them. And so that's oftentimes, you know, a woman's complaint because she's like, at least women will try to cheat up.
Mm-hmm.
But men will mess with anything. And that's if they're unhappy. And that's why we call them dogs. But if they're not emotionally fulfilled, any little thing giving them some attention, they'll entertain it. And so for many of us, it seems like men don't care what a woman look like. But when you're not getting that attention and that love and that emotional support, and it's nothing to do with money. That's why the Will Smith, Jada Pinkett thing is so devastating for so many people because all she has to do is sit and look pretty all day. It's not that. It's about being emotionally fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not meeting your partner's needs emotionally, you leave them a chance to be lonely
mm-hmm.
and thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the entanglement is an interesting word because you're in a web, so to speak, where you can't really get out of it because you caught up. You know, and I was told that they were with Jada and Will, they were separated, you know, and that's the first I've ever heard of that. I've heard that they had an open relationship. And
right.
They've had this and that. But I mean, you know, in my heart of hearts, I always wondered about their relationship. You know, we talk about this. We talked about this before, you know, when you meet someone on the other, it's about being equally yoked. You know, when the person is not equally yoked, it does something, don't you think, to a relationship? I mean, because I can see, I would always wonder, why is she always trying to do some type of show? Like, she's just trying to compete or maybe it's just fulfill her talent. But I was like, she could do anything. She could buy a show. You know, she could own acting studios to help other young people and teach, you know. But I just thought, I always thought they weren't compatible. I didn't think. But he was he appeared to be head over heels for her.
Yeah.
She appeared to be head over heels for him to me.
You know who she reminded me of? Because I think when they got together, it was like after after the show that he was doing, The Fresh Prince.
Right.
And I remember that he reminded me of the girl that he was dating on the show. And then later, I don't know what her name was, but you know the girl he was dating on the show for a long time towards the end.
Nia Long.
Nia Long, there you go. And I remember that they actually ended up saying that Jada had actually tried out for that role, but didn't get it. She tried out for the part, and it ended up going to Nia. And so I thought that was really interesting because, you know, they were, looked like they were similar in height and stuff, and they kind of had the short hair thing going around that time. So I just always thought it was really interesting that she kind of looked like her from the show. So, yeah, Nia Long. But I had read in a magazine when I was a teenager about their relationship, and it was about not Trey. Well, it was about Trey, but his oldest son from a previous marriage.
Right.
And I remember that she said something I just thought was odd, because they were asking her about what it meant to be a stepmother. And do you hear any clicking in the background?
I do.
Okay. I hear clicking too, but I don't know what it is. Okay. But
I hear it every time you talk and move.
Okay. I don't have an earpiece, so I don't know where the clicking is coming from, but I hear it too every time, like when I stop, I don't hear the sound.
Do you hear it when I talk?
No. But every time I talk, I hear it, like,
right. Okay.
This cracking thing. Yeah. So anyway, she was talking about what it meant to be a bonus mom. And she had made this comment in the magazine about that she allows her husband to go to his ex-wife's house whenever the boy is like has a nightmare. He can go over there and like spend the night and stuff. And you know, as a teenager, that sounded really weird to me.
Yeah.
And I just, ever since then, I just thought their relationship is really odd, you know. And
yeah,
they created that show All of Us, I think it was,
yeah,
on television. And you know, I just really was never really feeling it, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah.
So I mean, how does that even transition into our relationship culture, you know?
Right. Yeah. Here's the problem with a lot of that. You know, those things are ideal if everybody is on board with being respectful and being non-jealous. But it's hard to get people, or not in love with each other, you know. It's hard to get people that were in love, that are in love to see each other in a different light, or see other people with other people. Like, for example, in our domestic violence class, we noticed that when people are trying to pay your bills or cut your yard, they're trying to keep another person from doing it. So that's a form of control. So it's like, what people are trying to make out of, you know, we want a big happy family, can often be construed as me spying and me being over there controlling what's going on, because I'm seeing what's going on. Now, if we didn't have any love in the first place, that's totally different. You know, maybe it was a one night stand, or maybe we were just dating and didn't know each other type of thing. But to just flat out, oh, we were in love for so many years and now we're gonna try to make some of this or be a big family with everybody, that's a little dysfunctional, according to what we have learned over the years. You know, people do those type of things to kind of stay in the mix so they can see what's going on. Who knows what they'll flip, you know. Maybe they're lonely and you're still in a relationship and y'all doing better than y'all were doing with us. And I see you doing better for them than I do me. And you taking care of them, you know, and you taking care of me, and you know, I did better by you and you doing this to this person. Oh no, it's a web of entanglement, kind of like what they talked about. It's not natural. It even, there's even a Bible parable about Hannah and Sarah wanting Abraham to have a baby, by Hannah and then got jealous because Hannah had that baby, you know, and so made her leave, you know, because you get jealous if you really love the person, you know. So I wouldn't recommend that, and I wouldn't recommend, and I wouldn't recommend people that have gone live together. You're opening your doors and your heart to them bringing a girl over or a man over, and you know, you paying the bills there and they goosing in the house, and it don't make sense. So it's not advisable from a criminal justice or legal perspective. That's when you think about a trial, they're like, why did you bring another lady to other lady's house and think nothing was gonna happen? You know, what was your purpose in doing that? You know, so when you look at it from that perspective, they're not gonna believe you. They're gonna think you were doing it to make the person jealous. So if a fight broke out or something happened in pursuit to what you've done, you know for sure you're not gonna get the benefit of the doubt. So, you know, these are things that it's not healthy. I always thought he was crazy about her more than she was crazy about him. He was very open about his for her. She was always trying to get him to calm down and relax, and she was doing this other thing. So I really don't think that he was her. She was his first choice. Although he's one of the wealthiest entertainers in the world, hardest working, I think that she was his choice. And as much as he working is gone, I'm wondering if he was her choice. I mean, you know, to me, he showed her a lot of affection initially, but I think she kind of backed him off, like tried to keep him subdued. And I don't think that was meeting his need emotionally. That's exactly what I think. I think he loved her, but she wasn't meeting his emotional needs. And so he may have gotten his needs met elsewhere. And obviously by him being gone and doing his thing, working, she wasn't meeting her needs. And so it's what you got, you know? Unfortunate, because they both appear to be very strong and talented people that a lot of people admire, but life happens to us all, you know. Nobody's exempt. I want to, before we get off, talk about these ads and this very important campaign we have going on in Dallas and all over the state of Texas today. Senator Royce West is running for U.S. Congress. And a lot of people are, you know, unaware can vote. And a lot of people are unaware that he's the best candidate, because his opponents have spent millions to try and contest him. And it really amazes me, because although Senator West has surpassed a lot of the pitfalls that have come through our society, he survived living in the projects. He survived high school, college, law school, becoming a successful lawyer, 27 years serving as state senator without a contestant or without an opponent in most races. No legal issues regarding his finances or his integrity. He's brought I know of two institutions to the state of in the state of Texas to Dallas, the law school and UNT Dallas. But he's also assisted and helped other senators bring institutions to their cities as well. And so he's brought over two or three, maybe even four institutions of higher learning. He's interned, helped a thousand children from college, obtain internships so they'd have experience when they graduated with their degrees and wouldn't be rejected with no experience speech. Helped many of them get hired on immediately after graduation. And he's also making sure that they got scholarships, hundreds of thousands of dollars in scholarships over the 27 years of serving as senator. He's helped host fairs, job fairs, historically underused business fairs. He's done a lot to help the District 23 residents, constituents, as well as the entire Dallas Metroplex. He never restricts his services to only his constituents. And yet, it's really difficult to get the word out about him being a candidate. I mean, to me, if you've been in politics for almost 30 years and you don't have any major flaws as an African-American male, I think that you have done a lot, right? And they're throwing stones at him. And I'm just thinking, for all the people that have been killed and died police brutality, even gun violence, he in itself represents who would have made it had those things not been in place. And he was actually one of the first senators to pass legislation in the nation for body cams on officers, requiring it. And then he also, I remember asking him this, when he takes students to different millionaires' homes to host rap sessions so they can be more knowledgeable about how to network and be successful professionally and personally. The Sandra Bland case happened, and I sat down beside him and I said, "Senator, we need you to look into this case." Sandra Bland was found hanging in her jail cell with a plastic bag, and we're wanting to know what happened. And that man launched that investigation. And I can assure you that all those years of service, all those things he's done, and that's not all he's done. He supported teachers with higher raises. So he's done a lot to help our city, our state. And so with all that stuff that he's done, you know, I'm just kind of flabbergasted that people haven't rallied around him to help him win that campaign. They would rather, and I say they because many don't know this, but the National Democratic Party decided to support his opponent, and she has literally no years of experience. I mean, who comes out the gate running for U.S. government? Usually you have to do and serve some time in the state government first. But she's like the president, never for anything else, but gets the opportunity to run for the highest office possible in that category. And they put their money behind her. And I think that that is an example
of what is going on in our nation today. I'm so disappointed that a person that has done all of those things did not get the support of their party. And it's disgusting. It really is disgusting that we would rather support someone that's inexperienced in that area, that is not knowledgeable about how to get things done, how to pass legislation, how to work with people across the aisle. Hadn't served for 27 years showing that I can do this. I brought monies to these cities and states and the state of Texas. And you'd rather go with someone that has not done it. Why? Why? Man. So yet today, we still struggle. We still struggle with equality. We still struggle. And this person that they're supporting is a new Democrat, just came to the Democratic Party. Man, it's dead. So I just want everybody to get out there and vote. I want everybody to tell everybody that this vote is so very important. And we have to do more in terms of supporting each other and being knowledgeable about what's important and holding people accountable. And I would definitely like to end on that note. If everyone could tell everyone to vote in the state of Texas, you have done diligence to help us. And if you would too, also vote, if you're eligible, please do that. That would help us a great deal. And that concludes our session for today, our segment. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Prissy, for always taking care of everything and making sure our show is what it needs to be, and co-hosting with me. It's going to do it for us today. Y'all be safe, vote. Be careful about who you're around and what you're doing. Tally up the cost. Be wise.
Healthy-ish is recorded live from Lankford Studios in Cedar Hill, Texas. Welcome to Healthy-ish, an educational podcast that navigates love, life, and everything in between. I'm your co-host, Prissy, and together I will be joined with Dr. Key, a relationship intelligence expert. Join us as we tackle some very controversial topics and stories. Due to some of the sensitive discussions regarding relationships and domestic violence, we advise listeners to use caution while listening. And now, a brief word from our sponsors. We'd like to send a special thanks to our supporters and for those listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. Have yourself a great day, and be sure to join us next time on Healthy-ish. Healthy-ish Ish is proudly supported by Langford Avenue and the Avenue Proactive Resource Center. For more information, visit our website at www.enddomesticviolenceindallas.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.